Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Let's talk about the mobility industry. We've seen how in the last decade, right, it's seen a lot of real progress towards a future that's more sustainable, efficient and convenient at moving people and goods.
And then COVID-19 came along, and placed immense stress on that sector. All of that, of course, due to restrictions on the movement of people and goods, as well as all these lockdowns in several markets here in Asia.
But, you know, just yesterday, Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister Heng Swee Keat said that COVID-19 has and will continue to accelerate a series of structural changes around the world.
So now the emergence of a new mobility ecosystem appears to be in doubt. But with the situation being so uncertain, leaders in the mobility sector can't just sit back and wait to see how it all plays out.
So in response to the present situation, right, you've got the Deloitte Future of Mobility Practice, and they've recently launched a report called The Futures of Mobility After COVID-19. And what it does is it explores four possible post-COVID-19 scenarios for the mobility industry.
Yeah, those scenarios took into account potential shifts in the four key dimensions: leadership, priorities, markets, and personal data.
So let's get a little bit more sense of what this report is, get some insights as well from Andrei Berdychevsky, the Future of Mobility Global Solution Center Director at Deloitte. Andrei, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Excited to join you today.
Thanks a lot for taking the time.
Yeah, we're excited to speak to you. So what was the state of the mobility industry before this outbreak?
Well, you outlined it very, very correctly. We've been constantly changing, constantly moving at a slower pace towards a more sustainable, more inclusive future, providing more customized travel options. And the five forces of change were, of course, the rapid growth in shared mobility, like car sharing and ride hailing, the topics of increasing viability of new powertrains, for example, electric vehicles, right? Not only for private cars, but for buses and commercial transport, lightweight materials, one of the trends, connected vehicles, and then the emergence of autonomous vehicles in the future end state. This is where we've been moving, but of course, there have been some changes with the COVID-19 crisis.
That obviously leads to challenges. What kind of challenges are we talking about?
Well, I think the challenges are twofold. So let's start with me and my team are working from home. So you see less travel taking place. And I would say in Singapore specifically, we have 3 out of 4 trips being either canceled or replaced through virtual mobility. So you've seen cities going down to at about 8 to 50% of their transportation capacity in Singapore, where we went down to 12% of the capacity and are now moving up to 23%. That's the state 2 days ago. So that means also less revenues and income for mobility companies, especially in the people transportation business, be it government-owned or public transport operators or even providers of personal mobility devices, which then restricts them in investing money for innovation, investing into infrastructure. So we have a slowdown into the development of the mobility ecosystem for sure.
Yeah, it sort of gets you stuck in a particular spot, doesn't it? So this report that you've produced explores four possible futures of mobility over the next 3 to 5 years. Why don't you walk us through them and also what fuels these potential scenarios?
Yes, absolutely. Very happy to do so. So we'll look into geopolitical scenarios first, talking about the severity of the crisis and the degree of collaboration. These are the two dimensions we took to understand what are the potential futures, right? We didn't want to make predictions. We don't have a crystal ball, but we could imagine different futures in which the society and the economy might move towards. And then we looked into the dimensions of leadership in terms of mobility, so private sector versus public sector, the priorities in terms of optimization. Am I optimizing the personal travel, the individual journey, or am I looking at the whole system? The market structure, who is leading in terms of, is the market more regulated or more market-led innovation? And then how do we handle personal data? And let's start with the two more extreme scenarios. One is passing storm. So this is where we would see a rapid recovery and a lot of collaboration across nations, where the virus is eradicated earlier, which means for mobility, there are still some changes, like more emphasis on vehicle sanitation, more emphasis on e-commerce and importance of last mile deliveries. The other extreme scenario would be the lone wolves, where we see actually a very severe crisis and lack of collaboration. So this is where everybody's fighting for themselves, and the government has to step up and gain greater authority in regulating mobility efforts, which means, for example, that we would see more innovation coming from the military sector and significant reduction in individual travel. So more focus on system-wide optimization. The two scenarios in the middle are the good company in Sunrise in the East. When we talk about the good company, there we see the private sector actually stepping up the game, especially large technology-based companies are thriving and taking leading positions in mobility, helping mobility to recover and also to innovate, where the government is becoming more of a junior partner to the private sector. The Sunrise in the East talks about still a severe pandemic, but a faster recovery in Asia, especially in East Asian countries and China. And with that, some of the models which are being helpful for Asian countries to recover being adopted globally. So there is a shift in balance. Asia is now leading in embracing a more hands-on approach through the cities, using data collection for safety and for efficiency, and policy tools which are championed in nations like Singapore, for example, or also China, such as license restrictions for new cars, dynamic road pricing, are increasingly adopted from the Western peers. So these are the four futures we imagine to recover after the COVID-19 pandemic.
So, Andre, you're saying that the private sector is somewhat leading the way where that's concerned, where the mobility sector is concerned. It's interesting because you also have to factor in individuals' fear when it comes to a post-COVID-19 situation. I'm curious, and I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more about exactly how adaptable is the mobility industry? Because for us, it's a straightforward thing. But what do you see?
I think the adaptation is highly dependent on where we invest and in terms of both infrastructure, but also, for example, configuration of the vehicles, okay. The topics of new technologies, and how do we work with our employees. So think about all the drivers, delivery drivers, all the service employees who are still continuing to work to serve the population. So there is definitely an adaptation ability. I believe that especially when the public and private sector come together in an ecosystem, this is where we will see much more innovation and much faster reconfiguration of the mobility system. And just to talk about what I think needs to be done in terms of the wins independent of the scenario. One is, okay. Of course, the topic of safety, right? We need to make our transportation clean. And I believe that the public transport will still be a backbone of our society if we want to have equitable access and environmental friendly transportation. So we need to make public transport safe. There are new technologies coming up, like, for example, infrared sanitation, but also topics like reconfiguring the seating inside buses and trains and shared vehicles, and implementing cashless systems, implementing more dynamic ways to travel. So on-demand shuttles is something which we can react to, but we do need the private and the public sector to come together and collaborate on this.
Just very quickly to follow up on your last comment there, does this mean that per trip in, say, a bus or a shuttle bus, for example, the capacity per bus or per transportation mode will have to be lesser, right?
So this is what we're seeing right now with the distancing measures. And the question, unfortunately, I don't have the crystal ball, is when we will be able to eradicate the virus and actually come back to the more close occupation of the vehicles. But as of now, we believe that the occupation will decrease, and with that, more dynamic approaches and also new configurations. So think right. about maybe you can isolate people from each other if it's required by the safety measures and still have the same utilization of the asset utilization of the vehicle.
Okay.
But safety comes first.
You were talking there about innovation just a moment ago, and it's interesting because there are some fascinating headlines around at the moment, like in Tesla's top external investor, which is investing $35 million in a flying taxi company. So Lilium is a German startup trying to be a major player in this air taxi space. You hear about these really almost sci-fi type ideas, but do you think that we will post-pandemic see some movement to more isolated forms of travel as well?
I think it's possible as one of the scenarios. We see, for example, right now in China, the personal vehicle sales picking up. again, and that's also a signal that people are more concerned to have a private mode of transport. I personally hope that we will see more active modes of transport, so people coming to cycling and walking, which is environmentally friendly and good for the health. But of course, we need to take care of all populations, people who are mobility impaired, and provide them with a variety of options. So yes, I think personal mobility will take off. Just consider that still we need to make sure that the way we move is environmentally friendly. In my opinion, the environmental crisis is something we shouldn't forget about, and it's one of the bigger crises of our generation. So innovation, especially in terms of transforming the drivetrain, so if it's individual travel, can we make it more clean, is something which I hope to see more and more accelerating in the future.
Oh, for sure. We cannot forget the environment. Just very quickly to wrap up, Andre, looking at how China has restarted their economy, Australia, New Zealand as well, in terms of an outlook, how does Asia compare with the rest of the world where the mobility sector is concerned?
Well, in one of my recent podcasts, I said Asia's uniqueness is in its diversity. So we will see very different approaches country by country. But what I think is applicable for a lot of Asian countries is the willingness of consumers to accept new technologies and adopt much quicker than their Western peers. This is what we're getting from our consumer research, which we're doing on the regular basis, as well as more willingness, and it depends, of course, which country you're talking to, but generally more willingness to share data for a greater good. So if there is a benefit, consumers here are more willing to share their data, for example, than in Europe, which both fuels the innovation. So I hope that Asia can become leading in terms of driving the innovation to make mobility more equitable, more accessible, and more sustainable in the future.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Andre Berdichevsky, Future of Mobility Global Solutions Center Director at Deloitte. Andre, thank you so much for your time this morning. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.